Jeff.
Hey, Cam, how are you?
I'm good. How about you?
I'm doing well. We haven't talked in a while, so I guess we got a lot to cover here.
Yeah.
Let me start off right where I am right now, because it comes to a point where just not knowing the game well enough starts to prohibit me from being able to analyze it. And I'd always been under the assumption this defense, this coaching staff, this scheme was well equipped to handle a running quarterback. But now we've seen it 2 years in a row out of Cam Newton. We saw it out of Kaepernick. We've seen it now out of Russell Wilson. Why is this defense now struggling with the implementation of this read option style? What is it about this style that is prohibiting the Bears defense from having any answers for it?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, the Bears are struggling with it, but I think really the NFL as a whole is struggling with it. You know, defenses are kind of scrambling to make their systems able to stop these kinds of, you know, really plays we see most of the time in college or high school. You know, they haven't really been a big part of the NFL game. So I think, you know, defenses as a whole are really scrambling to figure out a way to stop them. And just from, you know, Chicago, they are a single gap defense. No, you know, 1-3-5 technique. Linebacker is usually responsible for one gap. What the zone read does is really create an extra gap. So instead of, you know, having enough guys to cover each gap, now by reading a player and incorporating the quarterback into the run, you know, you really added a player to the scheme. And being a downhill defense, getting your defensive lineman up the field, not optimal against this type of an attack. So I think that that's why we've seen the Bears, you know, struggle. And then if it's Russell Wilson on the edge against, you know, Israel Adonijé or, you know, a defensive end, then most of the time Russell Wilson's going to win that battle. And that's kind of what we saw, not only on the zone read stuff, but when Russell Wilson got outside the pocket on some scrambles and picked up some very good yardage, but very important yardage in overtime and in the fourth quarter.
Well, the question I have is, and there's a lot to talk about with Brian Urlacher, but as I was sitting there in the stadium on Sunday, I kept waiting for this Bears defense to go to some sort of a spy approach with Brian in the middle or a linebacker in the middle. And when Russell broke whatever the contain was and started to head for the sideline, someone would be there to track him down. And there was nobody there doing that. Is that a scheme issue? Or was Brian Urlacher just not physically fit enough or physically well enough, I should say, to play that position on Sunday? It didn't make any sense to me because he just kept running the same play over and over, and it just kept working. So
yeah.
Was that scheme or was that player?
Yeah, it was scheme, and it wasn't really a lack of the defensive scheme being sound. It was really, really, really good job by Seattle's offense of creating an extra player. You know, the problem with playing a single-gap defense is, you know, there was one play in particular where Marshawn Lynch, I think it was in overtime, ran for like 13 or 14 yards right down the B gap. Well, they pulled the tackle inside. So Henry Melton was lined up in the B gap, the three technique player. He's responsible for the B gap. Israel Adonijé was responsible for the C gap outside of the tackle. Well, they pulled the tackle, which basically eliminated the C gap or eliminated the B gap. So Henry Melton is now in the C gap. Israel Adonijé is also in the C gap. Russell Wilson is reading Israel Adonijé. Izzy stopped his feet. Russell Wilson gave the ball to Marshawn Lynch. The tackle pulled through and blocked Lance Briggs, who was the A gap player. So basically they created an extra gap inside and left Israel Adonijé free. If Izzy would have crashed down on Marshawn Lynch, Russell Wilson would have pulled the ball, hit the edge, Lance Briggs would have got blocked by the tackle that pulled, and Russell Wilson would have been, you know, running down the sideline. So it was really just a good job by Seattle of having a scheme, of understanding what Chicago wanted to do on defense, and figuring out a way to stop that. The only way Chicago could have stopped that play, and it's very tough with, you know, four down linemen who attack their gap right away. Henry Milton would have had to basically get inside the guard. He's lined up outside the guard. He's a B-gap player. Once the tackle pulled inside, he would have had to cross-face the guard to get inside the new B-gap, and then Lance Briggs would have been in the A-gap, and there wouldn't have been a free gap. But, you know, to be able to do that when that's not your scheme, that's an adjustment you have to make. Unfortunately for Chicago, this was overtime. There was really no time to adjust, and Seattle drove right down the field.
But I remember there's two games I was thinking of in particular. One a few years ago, and I feel like they were in back-to-back weeks. They might have not been. But the Bears played Kurt Warner, and they played Carson Palmer with Cincinnati. And in both games, the Bears just had no answer for them. They were driving up and down the field. They were getting blown off the ball. And when I sat there on Sunday, those last two drives from the 3-yard line with Russell and then in overtime, I can't remember the Bears' defense looking as helpless as they were.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got the sense sitting there, and I'll tell you, there was about 60,000 people who agreed with me. If the game had started with 3 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, it felt like Seattle could have put up 100 on them. And it just looked like there was no answer. And I wondered in my head, and something you can speak to, as a defender, do you start to sense on the field that we don't have an answer for these guys, and we have no idea what to do to stop these guys? And how do you overcome that as a player on the field when you think you're being put in positions where you're not going to stop those guys based on your coaches? What's the mentality there? Because I can't imagine it.
I think what happened at the end of the game in overtime was that Bears defense, they were just tired. You know, one of the problems when you have any type of injury situations, you know, pop up week 12, 13, 15, later in the season, your starters have played all year. They're very well conditioned. You know, your backup guys on the D-line who rotate are in decent shape. You know, but those guys up front, they're used to rotating in when they get tired. Well, Russell Wilson goes no huddle. All of a sudden, you know, you have the same defensive lineman on the field for, you know, 10 plays in a row. You're expecting that front four to get pressure by itself. Well, if these guys are gassed up front, there's no way they can get pressure on an athletic quarterback like Russell Wilson, you know, contain him, not let him get outside and scramble for yardage. And then in cover two, you don't have pressure on the quarterback. Now you find holes. Receivers find holes, and that's what we saw, especially on that last drive in the fourth quarter. You know, the guys on defense trust the technique. They play what they're coached to do. They believe in the system. Unfortunately, I think, you know, It just came down to a rookie quarterback making veteran plays against a veteran defense in their own house, which, you know, if you ask me, okay, Chicago's up 14-10. There's 3 minutes left in the game. We're giving Seattle the ball at the 8-yard line. Okay, who are you going to take? 100 times out of 100, I'm taking that Bears defense. Unfortunately for them, this wasn't that time. I don't think this was, you know, all the things that people have been saying or been reading. This defense is old. Okay, it was kind of changing of the guard. Okay, it's time to get some, you know, younger players in. This defense showed its age on those two drives. I don't think it was that. I think it simply came down to Russell Wilson making plays, getting that Bears defense tired in the fourth quarter and in overtime, and Seattle making plays when Chicago couldn't.
Well, I agree with you. I think that getting old stuff is so crazy when you think that they played 57 great minutes of this game.
Yeah,
you don't suddenly get old with 3 minutes to go. The other thing I'll say about these quarterbacks, that's when people say things like, well, this is changing the way the game is played. The one thing I'll give these quarterbacks, I'll give Kaepernick, I'll give Russell Wilson, and I'll give Cam when he's played this Bears team, they're accurate. And
yeah,
the running quarterbacks in the past have not been accurate. McNabb was never accurate. Mike Vick has been historically inaccurate. These guys are accurate. They'll take that 8 to 10 yard inside seam route, and they'll hit it. And Russell Wilson was hitting it. And that's how you beat the Bears. If you can be a combination of a running quarterback and Matt Hasselbeck, you can beat the Bears.
Yeah.
And that's what he reminded me of. I'll tell you, he was impressive on Sunday. It surprised me how good I thought he was. For four quarters. But let's talk about Urlacher, because Listen, it looked like an old man out there running. I love Brian Urlacher. He's been a great Bear. He's been one of the all-time great Bears. But there was times when I looked up on the field and I saw him chasing guys that in his prime he would have caught easily. Tell me, as somebody who's lined up behind him, over these next four games, we're not going to see him out there. What will the Bears miss not having Brian Urlacher on the field?
Man, you know, of all my years playing football, high school, college, in the NFL, I never played with a more intense defensive player than Brian Urlacher. When you stepped on the field with Lack, you either raised your intensity level to match his, or he was going to literally grab you by the shoulder pad and throw you off to the sideline and tell him to put another guy in. That's the kind of intensity this guy plays with. That's the level that he expects everybody else around him to play at as well. And it's just like Ray Lewis. Ray Lewis, everybody knows how intense Ray Lewis is. Everybody sees him, you know, getting pumped on the sideline, doing his dance when he comes into the stadium. Brian Urlacher's the same guy. He just does it in his own way. You don't see him, you know, on camera celebrating. And I'm taking away nothing from Ray Lewis. Don't get me wrong, one of the greatest linebackers ever. And he does it his way. But Brian Urlacher has the same effect on the defense as Ray Lewis does. He raises everybody else's level of play, level of intensity, their attention to detail in the meeting rooms, on the field. You know, he'll tell you something right before the snap to get you in a better position for what this offense is going to do. He understands exactly what's going to happen. Those are the things they're going to miss. And Nick Roach is, at this point in their respective careers, a much better athlete than Brian Urlacher is. So in that regard, I think you're going to see a guy in the middle flying around and making a lot of plays. I think this guy's an exceptional young player, and he's really played that Sam position and been substituted on passing downs. So we haven't really seen, you know, what he can do. I think this guy is going to blossom in the middle, to tell you the truth. I think he's going to be, you know, really a perfect fit to replace Urlacher right now in the season, which to have him is really a luxury, a guy that can just slide over from the Sam position and take over that middle. So, you know, on the field, nobody understands this defense like, you know, Lack does. I mean, Lance Briggs knows it, Charles Tillman, they all understand it, but there are, you know, intricacies with that Mike position in the cover two system that Lack understands. And I'm sure he'll be with Nick Roach all week in the meeting room and on the sideline giving him pointers and stuff like that. But, you know, we may see Nick Roach out of position a few times because, you know, Lack is such an exceptional player.
That's great stuff on Urlacher, and it's the thing everyone talks about, which is the guy calling, being the signal caller on a defense, I think is very underrated at times, and you see when teams lose their signal caller how they can lose their way. But bringing a couple other guys off the bench, we know Nick Roach will be successful. He's been excellent in coverage actually all year.
Yeah.
How hard is it to beat Geno Hayes or Kelvin Hayden this week when here we are, 12th game, or now we'll be at the 13th game of the season? How hard is it to step into this group, this established group of players, and step into the starting lineup this week?
Well, I think, you know, the one thing with Geno Hayes is he really plays, you know, I don't want to say the easiest position on this defense because it's not, but he really plays an unheralded position, a position that really, and we saw Hunter Hillenmeyer do this his whole career, be in the exact right spot and make the plays that come to you. Otherwise, you just do your job, and really your job is to create an opportunity for somebody else to make a play. Really, the nose in this system and the Sam linebacker in this system are the two guys who have the least amount of opportunity to make plays and really get put in the least amount of vulnerable positions schematically. So Geno Hayes will fit right in. You know, replacing Tim Jennings, you know, this year is a task that nobody in the NFL is up to because he's played at such a high level. But we've seen Kelvin Hayden come in and play that nickel position successfully this year, really took over for DJ Moore, who, you know, I haven't heard what Lovey said or what Rod Marinelli has said as to why DJ Moore suddenly, you know, was on the bench and Kelvin Hayden was playing, but Kelvin Hayden has played that position well. I thought DJ Moore was playing it very well before, you know, he was that spot was taken away from him.
But you know better than that, Cam. You're not going to hear them say anything about why they're benching a guy. You know these guys aren't going to tell you a word.
It just, I was shocked, and I saw Kelvin Hayden playing periodically in that nickel spot. And I thought DJ Moore played the nickel last year and at the beginning of this year as good as anybody in the NFL was playing it. So it was a shock to me. And I know Kelvin Hayden is bigger. I know he's a little more physical, and that position is a physical position, especially like Seattle was doing, going three wide receivers and running that zone read. You need a guy to get off the block and make a tackle. But I was shocked. And, you know, I'm at a loss for answers as to why that happened. Obviously something went on to make that happen. But, you know, Kelvin Hayden is good. When you play that nickel, you're playing inside quick, short space. When you're out on the outside, now you're lining up against number one receivers. The good thing about this system, and we spoke earlier in the season about how really exceptional it was that Charles Tillman and Tim Jennings were making so many plays in the system, but also playing within the scheme. The good thing about this scheme is you can plug in a guy like Kelvin Hayden who understands it, and he can play the scheme, play his technique, and not be put in a real, you know, one-on-one vulnerable situation. And luckily for them, you know, the Vikings receivers are not the most, you know, vaunted group, especially with one of the better guys in the NFL, Percy Harvin, going on IR this week.
Well, you know, it's funny because that was a perfect segue. So here are the Bears. 2 weeks ago, they're preparing for this exact same team.
Yeah.
It's simple, right? You go out there, you stop Adrian Peterson, you win. Except the Packers just proved a week ago, you don't even have to stop them and you win. So you can get 200 yards and you beat them. So what am I? Maybe I'm missing something, but my feeling is you hold this guy to 100 yards, there's no way for this Vikings group to beat you. Maybe Kyle Rudolph gets a caught on a few passes, but they have not shown an ability to beat you. Is it just about stopping Adrian Peterson, and does that come down to anything more than just sound tackling?
No, I mean, that's what it comes down to. It comes down to being in position to not give up, even though Green Bay gave up big plays last week, to not give up a big home run to Adrian Peterson. He's shown throughout his career, and, you know, having gone through an ACL repair during my career and seeing what this guy has done on such a short rehab period is, I mean, we knew this guy was a machine. We knew that he was a beast, but this guy should be medically studied for something that no other human being on this earth has. It's exceptional to me. It took me a year to even feel normal, and this guy's at a higher level now, you know, 8, 9, 10 months out of surgery. So, I mean, it's ridiculous. But it comes down to them forcing Christian Ponder to beat them, basically. I would line up, bring Major Wright down, sit him in the box, go one-on-one outside, make Christian Ponder beat you, take up every available gap Adrian Peterson has to run through, and make him do that. And then once you get a lead, now you can play cover two. Now you can give up, you know, a few runs to Adrian Peterson and just keep him out of the end zone. You know, that's really what it comes down to. I think this is probably, you know, the best offense in this kind of transitional week with Lack out, with Tim Jennings out, you know, one of the better offenses they can go against just as far as knowing exactly what they have to stop. And, you know, I don't think Christian Ponder can beat this defense.
Well, I said the same thing last Sunday morning as I'm walking in Soldier Field about Russell Wilson. And so
I sold out
hope that that's actually the case. You've just touched on it a little bit, but this is a good way to end. Tell me where this defense is this week. Tell me where you think this defense will be a month from now as they are, I still say, presumably going to be heading into the postseason. Is this still one of the best defenses in football, and has the panic been sort of unwarranted?
I mean, right now I don't think you can say that they are one of the best defenses in the NFL simply because you're only as good as what you put on film. And what they've put on film for 2 weeks is a defense really struggling and searching for answers a little bit. And when you lose your leader in the middle of a cover two, you know, you're going to have some growing pains. So right now, I don't think we can sit here and say that. I know throughout Lovie's time with Rod Marinelli, especially as defensive coordinator, when we've seen this defense struggle, they usually bounce back pretty quickly. And I think, you know, it's a tough stretch for them at the end of the season, but I think they are going to right the ship. This defense, when it comes playoff time, I fully expect them to be, you know, playing at midseason form. You know, I think we've seen really two offenses that have created really unique problems for the defense. And, hey, for 57 minutes, this defense against Seattle did an exceptional job. You know, the only thing we seem to remember are those last 3 minutes in overtime, and rightly so because it cost them the game. But we're not talking about a defense that gave up 35 points to Seattle. You know, they gave up some to Kaepernick and really looked bad in that game, but I think they played a lot better last week. Now it's just plugging in new guys and trying to play at that same level, staying consistent and, you know, really forcing a guy that I don't think can beat them, forcing him to try to beat them.
So you're basically saying that unless Les Frazier decides to go Joe Webb and go into the read option,
they can do that. But like you said earlier, Russell Wilson, Cam Newton, Kaepernick, RG3, these guys aren't athletes playing quarterback. They are quarterbacks who are exceptional athletes. There's a difference between these guys and a Joe Webb or even, you know, a Mike Vick. And we're seeing these guys who are true, accurate passers, can throw the ball down the field, can make every throw they need to make, and they are also exceptional athletes and create more problems for a defense. And this is how we're going to see the NFL changing to this type of stuff. You know, 10, 15 years down the road, we'll still have a few Tom Brady-type, Peyton Manning-type quarterbacks, but we're going to see more and more of these quarterbacks who are legitimate, great quarterbacks, but are also, you know, guys that run 4-4, guys that can get outside the pocket, you know, guys like Johnny Manziel who run for, you know, 1,200 yards and run 4-4 and can get down the field and make plays. That's what I think we're going to see because these guys have shown they can make the throws, but, you know, you can hit them 10, 15, 20 times a game and they can keep on getting up and making those same throws.
Cam, thanks as always. And I can tell you one thing, next week as we go and prepare for Aaron Rodgers, we will not be talking about the read option because I don't think Aaron Rodgers is going to go read option at Soldier Field. Thank you, Cam. Talk to you next week.
My pleasure. Sounds good.